Kevin O'Sullivan.
Kevin O'Sullivan. And we're sitting here recording this, having just seen a couple of royal stories, right? We don't normally talk about the royal family, apart from when it's old Harry and Meghan. Yeah. And we're trying not to talk too much about them this year. But the King and the Princess of Wales are both involved in some kind of medical drama.
Yeah, well, I was on air. When you'll probably be listening to this a couple of days hence, but I was on air on Wednesday afternoon around about 2 o'clock. Suddenly, we're in the middle of a big show about the Rwanda bill, obviously. It emerges, it is announced that Kate, Princess of Wales, has had major abdominal surgery and is going to spend at least 2 weeks in hospital and won't be seen again until Easter. It then emerged that actually we haven't seen her since Christmas Day. This was elective surgery. It was booked, preordained, as it were. And therefore, she's clearly been feeling very unwell since Christmas.
Well, I mean, as somebody who had some surgery not that long ago, I mean, the thing about it is that people don't realise, I suppose, how serious operations are. And you do need, as I know well, better than anyone, a lot of time to recover. But 2 weeks is not long to actually recover. But what it is unusual is that they're keeping her in hospital.
Yeah, we're not going to speculate, you know, because that's not fair. But whatever it is, it's really serious. Because nobody spent, when you have a very serious operation, do you have to stay in hospital for as many as 2 weeks,
right,
and also to cancel all engagements till the Easter. So we wish her all the best. And then, it emerged the same day, same afternoon, the King is going to hospital for treatment
now,
on an enlarged prostate.
Now, this is where it starts to get interesting, right? Because why has he announced that the same day? Surely they would have known, no matter what's going on here, neither of these things is particularly emergency related, right? So we've been told that Kate is sort of going in for something or has had some surgery on something that she knew was a problem. He presumably must have known that he's got an enlarged. He hasn't just decided this morning, has he, to go in and get an operation?
No, I hadn't thought of that.
I just wonder why they're both coming in the same day.
I guess to get them out of the way. And to be fair to both Kate William and King Charles, at least they're acknowledging that, you know, they understand the public are interested.
Yeah.
They have a curiosity about them. And this is called a trade-off. And I don't want to put score points here, but they understand that their privacy is one thing, but people not will want to invade it, but we want to know stuff about them. They're the royal family, and there is a certain couple over in California who don't understand that interactivity that is required between the people and the royals. And you might expect us to make facetious juvenile jokes at this point, but now is not the time. What I think we can make some facetious juvenile jokes about is these two royal stories emerging will extraordinarily keep the fucking Rwanda bill off the front pages.
Well, do you know, I'm just online at the moment as we speak, and I can't find any trace of the Rwanda bill. All this seems to have fallen so far down the agenda that it's disappeared.
Yeah, well, what you might miss...
it's literally gone.
So this is Wednesday, so we're anticipating the newspapers tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
It'll be all about Kate and the King.
Yeah.
And then there might be a little blob at the top of the front page saying, turn to page 2 for the end of the Tory government.
Yes.
And Rishi resigning.
And also, actually, it'll be a story that most people wouldn't care that much about because they know it's coming. It's just a matter of when is it coming, right?
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about the Rwanda bill because, as I say, we can be childish about this. And also, I think, I hope, perceptive.
Yes, of course. It's what we're known for.
Yeah, childishness and perceptiveness. Rishi Sunak. I mean, he's chosen to fucking die on this hill. And whether, again, we've got to sort of frame this. We don't know what the result of the big vote on the main bill will be.
All the politicos are going, oh, he's going to squeeze through.
Squeeze it through.
Well,
I still think he's fucked. I think he's fucked.
Either way.
Whether or not he gets through.
Yeah. I think that's true, because if it does get through, it doesn't work, right? So therefore, it won't stop the boats. Therefore, the main purpose of it will be pointless. And Rwanda have now said, apparently, that if the no so no migrants no migrant, no, no migrants actually arrive, they'll give all the money back.
Yeah.
To which I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute, if they don't want the money, why have we given it to them in the first place? Yeah, why don't we do it the other way around? Like, for example, the way most normal people operate, if I'm going to buy something from you, I'm going to wait till you give it to me.
Well, also, if we do get... What he's saying, what's his name? Paul Kagani, isn't it? He's saying, well, if you don't get a single migrant here, we'll give you all the money back. So we should send, like, one migrant, and that would be the most valuable migrant in the history of migrants, because he'd be worth about 400 million quid.
Well, to be fair, that's about as many as you'll probably get between now and the end of the fucking year, because the idea that somehow all human rights lawyers will stop trying to stop people being deported just because Rishi Sunak says that everything's fine in Rwanda is for the birds. It's absolutely nonsense.
Yeah.
Absolutely bloody ridiculous. Everybody knows that these guys who make an awful lot of money defending these fucking illegal migrants, they're not going to just stop doing it, are they?
No, no, exactly. And, you know, the big sort of elephant in the room is that what Rishi has essentially said is, if we get this bill through, if the ECHR, the European Court of Human Rights, tries to stop another flight, I will, or the government will overrule them. Well, why didn't they say that in the fucking first place?
Yeah.
Why didn't we fucking overrule that fucker who was in a restaurant when they rang him in Strasbourg, a taxi rank drudge, and said, well, oh, we've got this plane on the runway, can it take off? Hang on a second, I'll just finish my brandy.
Yeah.
No, it can't. No,
absolutely right. That's another bird.
Well, why cheese. Didn't we just, I'll tell you what, finish your fucking meal and fuck right off. The plane takes off.
But I've been saying this for as long as I can remember. All we have to do is fucking ignore them. Because that's what the French do.
That's what everybody does.
That's what every other country in Europe does. The Scandinavian countries manage to deport loads of people.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. And if the ECHR say fuck all about it, they just carry on and do it anyway. Yeah. One of the things that I found particularly amusing this week, though, is that apparently Rwanda has let it be known that they're slightly unsure of how their image is now looking because they're associated with such a shit show. Right? Like, this is a country. This is a country where not more than about 25 years ago they were chopping arms off each other because they were the wrong tribe.
Yeah, but
and they were committing war crimes every single day of the fucking week. But now they're ashamed to be associated with us.
And who can blame them? I think that what the Rwandans should do is introduce into their parliament a safety of Britain bill.
Yes,
because it will fucking fail because Britain isn't fucking safe.
No.
Unlike Rwanda, which is safe.
No, I mean, you've got more chance probably of being knifed to death on the streets of London than you have in the streets of fucking Kigali.
Yeah, I mean, this safe.
All the machetes have been moved over here.
But I think it's a good, interesting innovation, you know, that Rishi's getting 650 MPs to vote that Rwanda is safe, even though most of the fuckers couldn't even point to it on a map.
No.
So why don't we do, you know, with other countries, you know, I don't know, Somalia, Christ knows where. And also other countries, if we're going to make fucking acts of parliament about whether or not places are safe, why doesn't, say, Rwanda or some foreign country pass the pass the Sadiq Khan's and Arsehole Act or something like that. Yeah?
Well, we could try that, but I mean, that has been tried, and unfortunately, he's still sitting there.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that this week it came out that he spent loads and loads of money on all sorts of ridiculous things, like a nighttime czar who's paid something like 107,000 quid
to go out at night.
A superannuated fucking DJ from BBC Radio 6 who seems to just fucking wander about doing fucking DJ nights in clubs. Then you've got the cycling czar, Will Norman, who's on about 100,000 quid, locking us all out of our own fucking streets. Then you've got some other fucking diversity and inclusion czar on about £140,000. And they spent money, believe it or not, I didn't even know this, but during the summer, apparently last year, they spent money on making a beach somewhere in East London on the Thames, you know, down by some...
I remember it.
What the fuck? So he's spending like hundreds of millions. He's denying it. His people in power are saying this is all exaggeration by the Daily Mail. But I don't think it is, because there's fucking categorical evidence of monies that he spent, including that shit fireworks display, you know, presented by the Mayor of London,
The mayor of London.
Fuck right off.
I'll tell you what. If Sadiq Khan says that the Mail's lying about him and his shit administration, tell you what, Sadiq, sue the Daily Mail. I bet you that lawsuit does not materialise, because I bet you the fucking Daily Mail is spot on about all those ludicrous fucking publicity-seeking appointments. It's a bit like...
Apparently he's got a bunch of fucking deputy mayors as well, like loads of them.
Yeah, almost as many as the Tory party.
Well, the Tory party now has three left.
To lose one Tory party deputy chairman is understandable. To lose two is frankly fucking careless. Mm. But talking of lawsuits, right, to go back to the royals, a story also emerged this week, which I think fucking defies belief. It absolutely and utterly proves that not only are Meghan and Harry fucking liars, they're prepared to sue people to endorse their lies.
Oh, yeah.
So we learned this week that the Queen was incandescent with rage that those two assholes in California stole her name, Lilibet.
Didn't ask her.
She didn't give the blessing. And the BBC, to its credit, reported this story. The Queen very disconcerted by the user. Then other newspapers did it as well. They fired off those two people legal letters telling newspapers and the BBC to desist from repeating this lie that the Queen had not given her blessing.
Right.
It was not a lie. It was utterly fucking true. And the Queen, to her credit, said, I'm not backing you up on this, you fuckers.
This is in the new Robert Hardman book.
Yeah, this is in the Robert Hardman book, which shows that, you know, not only are they prepared to lie, they're prepared to launch legal action to endorse their own lies. Yeah. What the fuck is wrong with them?
So they've got something in common with Michelle Moan then. Yeah. They like doing that. You know, that's when she went on BBC television to say that she did lie, but actually it was okay for her to lie because she was doing it to protect her family.
Bullshit.
When people went, yeah, well, you didn't just lie, did you? And she went, what do you mean? And they went, well, when people started to ask you if you were sure that you weren't lying, you started threatening to fucking sue them and ruin them and
like
take their
fucking
houses.
Like people always do, what they always do.
And, you know, not so, it's a bit like the old post office scenario. It's not just about the fact that they lie. It's about the fact that they use those lies to absolutely ruin people and to threaten people. And so this is what fucking bullies do, isn't it? So Harry and Meghan are bullies. Fucking Michelle Moan is a bully, and so are the fucking post office.
Absolutely. And
God damn them all to
and
hell.
God damn them!
You know.
But fucking, you know, the post office thing is all about the establishment, isn't it? It's all about the big people, the chief executive and the bosses and the boards of directors all coming together saying, well, we've really fucked up here, but let's blame the little people and we'll get away with it. That's how the establishment works. And every day, I'm really pleased about this, every day in every way, people in this country are realising how the British establishment works, and quite rightly, they're saying to the British establishment, why don't you lot go and fuck yourselves?
Yeah, exactly.
Smash the establishment and we'll have a better country.
Yeah, you're starting to sound like a bit of a communist there. You're going back to your
fucking
roots.
I don't like the establishment. I never have.
I never have either. You know, it's funny when people say to me, oh, you're just like one of them. I'm really not, you know, and in fact, I try my very level best never to fucking defend them. You know, the idea that people think I'm some kind of fucking Tory is laughable. You know, I might have some right-wing views. It doesn't make me a Tory, because they're not very fucking right-wingers.
Yeah, it's exactly what I said this morning. Somebody said to me, why do you always vote Tory? I said, I've never voted Tory.
No, me neither.
Tory in my life. And do you want to know why? They're not fucking left-wing. They're too fucking left-wing. They're not right-wing enough.
Exactly right. There you go. Now, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to hear from our friends at Shopify. Hey, Kevin, do you know what that means? It's that something I've been hearing a lot lately. It's that ka-ching noise. And I have to say, it sounds like money to me. But I feel like I'm missing out because it seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or a business or becoming their own boss. And do you know what they're hearing a lot of? It's this sound. It's the sound of yet another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your very own business. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionising millions of businesses worldwide. And it's coming to the UK. It's in the UK. You can get hold of it anytime you want, whether you're selling T-shirts, whether you're selling podcasts, whether you're selling any kind of merchandise, whether you're selling fine art or whether you're selling flaky salt. You could also be selling something to do with fashion, homes and gardens, health and beauty. You know, I mean, Christmas is coming up after all. You might as well get a bit of a boost. Covering all of your sales channels, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can successfully grow your own business. It gives you a shopfront-ready point-of-sale system, so it's all in one e-commerce platform. Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. It's full of the industry-leading tools ready to ignite your growth. Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without learning new skills in design or coding. So I think even you could probably use it. Thanks to 24/7 help and with an extensive business course library, Shopify is also ready to support your success every step of the way. And also, what's lovely about Shopify is that no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify will be there to empower you with the confidence and the control to take your business to the next level. A little bit when we decided to go out there and start doing live shows, and when we started doing podcasts and we started doing all sorts of other things and merchandise and all of that. You know, it's time to get serious about selling and get Shopify today. This is all possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/thoughtpolice. It's all lowercase. So go to shopify.co.uk/thoughtpolice to take your business to the next level. Don't forget, shopify.co.uk/thoughtpolice. Now, I've got some bad news for you, Kev. I know how you like to sort of prance around in the West End looking at theatres and things like that, right? Apparently, the operatic adaptation of The Handmaid's Tale is going to be cancelled because the English National Opera's orchestra and chorus, for laughing, they're going to have a strike on the opening night.
Well,
right?
I know why.
Well, Union Equity have announced a strike, presumably because they say they want more money.
Well, it's a bit more than that. It's that the English National Opera is being forcibly moved out of London because the Arts Council say, unless you, you know, geographically correctly move away from the capital,
they go to Manchester.
You will lose your grant, multi-million pound grant, and without that, the English National Opera ceases to exist.
Yeah.
And all these people, these poor musicians and choruses,
who don't make loads of money.
Yeah, of course they don't, but they've got houses and families and homes here in London.
Yeah.
To tell them to all fuck off to Manchester, you know, that's just not fair.
Who the fuck are these people making these decisions? Is this the Arts Council?
Arts Council.
These are these fucking twats, right, who go, it's really good to spread the wealth around the country. And so what we're going to do is we're going to make loads of people move to the north of England. And where do you live? I live in Barnes, just west of Hammersmith. Very nice there. I've got lovely schools. Kids are all very happy. Are you moving to the north of England? No, absolutely not. They're all sending people off to fucking live in other parts of the country, but they stay the fucking London.
Yeah, they call it geographical correctness.
Yes.
Which is like, just like the BBC when all the bosses sent everybody to fucking Manchester to Salford Media City, but they remain steadfast.
But the reason I'm laughing at this, though, is notwithstanding what you say about the workers and, you know, good luck to them, but it's all these fucking champagne socialists, right? Because you can imagine all the people that go to the English National Opera will all be like, oh yes, I really support the NHS doctors and the nurses, and we're not giving them enough money. And also, I really support the train driver's strike because, you know, people should be able to make a decent living. Well, fuck you lot, because now you can't go to the opera.
No, I've been to the English National Opera.
I'm sure you have.
They perform at the Coliseum Theatre, a really good theatre.
Yeah. I don't think I've been there.
And they put on good productions, and
I hate opera though. I fucking hate it.
It's not my favourite form of entertainment.
Too long.
But fuck me, sending them to Manchester is destroying a fine.
Well, who's going to go to the opera in fucking Manchester? I'm sorry to be, you know, northist about it, but you know what I mean, lad. Fucking hell, what's that shite?
They're all down the fucking Old Trafford. Man City, aren't they? Fighting.
Yeah.
No, exactly. No, it's
ridiculous.
It's
isn't
destructive.
Plainly fucking ridiculous.
Destructive and unnecessary.
I don't know if I've told this story to you before, but I once went to the Bolshoi Ballet. I came to New York.
I've seen the Bolshoi Ballet.
And I went with my then, I can't remember if we were married or not, but the woman I married anyway, and my sister and her then boyfriend, who was Alan Hall, who you know well.
Yeah.
It was so fucking, you know, such a big thing. You know, New York was absolutely thrilled to have the Bolshois there, you know, the greatest ballet company that the world has ever seen. It was at the Lincoln Center, which is a lovely place up near Columbus Circle. And it was fucking awful. We went there, right? And Alan and I very much dragged against our will, you know, to be cultural. And the thing that I couldn't understand was like this. And you can hear all these tapping feet, you know, and I was like, surely the fucking music should be louder. I don't want to hear all these people's feet on the fucking stage, right?
Bad.
And it was Ivan the Terrible they were doing, which later became known as Ivan the Terrible Cunt. And he and I fucked up at half time, went to the pub, left them there.
What do you think of Ivan? What do you think of Ivan the Terrible? Terrible!
What a terrible cunt he was.
I saw the Bolshoi Ballet. Guess where I saw them?
In Russia?
Moscow.
Yeah. Fucking hell. See, they start putting the pieces together of your rather curious political past. Were you invited by the Kremlin?
No, I was just there, so...
you went on holiday there?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, not on holiday.
You don't sound as though you're being entirely truthful.
I went there with... when I was at school. It was a school trip.
School trip to Moscow.
Did a Russian O-level.
Christ almighty. Did you?
Yeah.
Well, can you speak Russian then?
Well, I wouldn't say not very much. I'd do a few words.
Really? Go on.
Yeah, so...
I could do
Dost Vidanya. Dost Vidanya. Как важиву? Я живу в Хампстедже. So that's where do you live? I live in Hampstead.
Like all Russians.
So there's all these cases, genitive.
That's very impressive. How have I never known this?
Yeah.
It's so secretive. Yeah. Fucking O'Sullivan, right? I've known him fucking 40 years. I didn't know he fucking spoke Russian. Anyway.
That's a bit of an exaggeration.
Well, you speak more Russian than I do.
The one thing I remember for just bizarre reasons is their word for church, or one of the ones. Yeah. And it's just such a lovely word. It's Selkov.
No, that is nice.
Selkov.
Well, a lot of their words are rather nice, aren't they?
They are. It's a great language, but it's fucking complicated. It's really complicated. I did get the O level, but I can't pretend to be conversationally proficient.
Yeah, but still, in Russian. If it ever kicks off in some kind of outside place, like a restaurant, because there was a time when I used to go out quite a bit, it's sort of around about. Probably 10, 12 years ago, there was loads of Russians always in every fucking place you went, anywhere in London. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting into a fight with one guy one night because I was shit-faced, and it was probably very unwise. I can't remember what it was about. But I was somewhere in Soho, and this fucking Russian guy started kind of giving me some shit. And so I just started giving him some shit back. And I mean, for all I knew, he was probably going to pull a fucking gun out.
Yeah, Kalashnikov.
Or he had fucking, you know, bodyguards around the corner. But for some reason, it would have been useful to have you there, because you could have said, you could tell him to fuck off. Because you know how to fuck, tell him to fuck off in Russian.
That's one of the first things
you use.
I did know, but I've forgotten.
Yeah.
Good language, interesting language.
So great.
When they invade, I'll be ready.
I'm sure it's an interesting country. I mean, I've never been to Russia. I would have quite liked to go before now. Now I'm not so sure. You know.
Oh no, I think it's enemy territory.
I mean, my sister took the train. She and my mother went and did the train journey, I think, from Moscow to St. Petersburg. And they said it was brilliant. They really enjoyed it. But basically, the currency they all wanted was Marlboro cigarettes.
Yeah.
And you could get anything you wanted from Marlboro cigarettes. They were exchanging Marlboro cigarettes for bottles of champagne.
You just brought something back to me. You just brought something back to me. When we went to Russia, we sailed there on a ship called the Baltika, which was very famous for being used to deport about 107 Russian spies who were based in Britain. We kicked them all out for about a year before we got on the fucking thing. Anyway, we then we sailed to Russia, you know, via Finland, Sweden, and all that, and Denmark. Got to Leningrad, but they told us before, when you go, because we're going to meet other Russian school kids, they said, take biros and chewing gum, because that is the biggest treat in the world for these kids, biros and chewing gum. So that's your communist fucking paradise, kids without biros or chewing gum.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? But I mean, I remember going to Europe on holiday when we were kids, and there was lots of things that they wanted from Britain. I'm not sure that would be the case now if you ever went to any part of, you know, like the Mediterranean or, you know, even further east into Eastern Europe. There's not much you can't get now in the rest of the world, is there?
Yeah. No, exactly. And in those, but in those days, I always remember, but, you know, we went to see other Russian, went to a Russian school. Yeah.
How old were you?
About 16.
Or actually, old enough to,
old enough.
To,
yeah, we weren't
shagging.
But these kids, they treated us like visiting superstars from another planet.
Yeah.
And what it proved is to live in a communist country is utter fucking shit.
Yes.
Those poor kids.
Yeah.
And you can, all these oligarchs who make money in Russia these days.
And then leave.
Who can blame them? They grew up in a shithole.
Right, absolutely. So there's no tales to tell of sort of, you know, teenage.
I've got another another story about when we
holiday went romances.
Check this out. It wasn't without incident, our school trip to Leningrad in Russia. In Moscow. In Moscow, we're staying in this hotel. This was real Cold War days.
So
they'd say, don't go out too far. If you must go out for a walk, just stay within. So me and another kid, we go out for a walk, just to sort of walk around the block, have a look around. We're walking down the street, and this bloke just fell over in front of us. And we ended up being like fucking witnesses, coppers that took simply because he died.
Oh, Jesus.
He just died.
What, just some alcohol?
So we go, no. Oh, yeah, that's what they do. I don't know if they still do it, but in those days. So, you know, another reason it's shit to be in a communist country. So, you know, we have those things called pubs and restaurants. So fucking Russia in those days, the best they had with these huge fucking barrels with a bloke standing there with a tap on the corner of the street.
Yeah.
And you see all these people freezing their bollocks off just having a pint, standing by. Yeah. That was their idea of a pub.
Yeah.
And we went to their big store was called Gok or something like that. Goff or something. It's their big department store. Right by the Red Square, like the Kremlin and all that. So he goes, oh, we've got to see Goff Gore. I'll look it up. Anyway, so we go there, open the doors. So from the outside, it looked a bit, I don't know, slightly Selfridge or not quite Harrods, but, you know, quite a kind of standard issue.
Decent-looking facade.
A shop facade, yeah. Department store. So we go in and it's like a fucking jumble sale. It's just like loads of clothes all piled all over the floor with old ladies just sifting through them. But an interesting trip.
Yeah, interesting. Well, there we go. We learned something more about Kevin every single time we do one of these. Now we're going to take another little break here because we're going to hear from our friends at AG1, which of course is the new nutritional drink that everybody's going for. Hey Kev, have you heard about AG1? It's a brand new way to achieve wellness and it's really simple to use. And after the Christmas and New Year we've had, might just be the ticket. AG1 is a daily nutrition supplement and it's empowering people to take ownership of their health. It's designed by scientists and it's a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high quality ingredients. Just one scoop, once a day, one glass of water. It all takes less than a minute and the people at AG1 can help you with just how to get it working for you. It takes seconds to mix each morning, but it helps to support your brain, your heart, your energy, and even your immunity health as well. And if that's not a good New Year resolution, I don't know what is. I've already introduced my family to it and they're loving it. It improves your focus when you've got a lot on, and the B vitamin supports sustained energy throughout the day without the caffeine crash you get from coffee. AG1 is also your daily dose of vitamin C, zinc, functional mushrooms, and more to support overall immune health. You'll find your mood balance improves and your stress levels are more manageable too. And you know that makes sense. I know you're going to try it out at home too, Kevin. In your case, it's going to be great because it's going to be good for your hair, for your nails, your skin, and even for that heart of yours, which needs a little bit of help. And also, you never know, your other half might appreciate you better too. And in case you're wondering, we can tell you that AG1 is made from the highest quality ingredients under the strictest manufacturing standards, and it's certified for sports use as well because it's been tested for over 280 banned substances. That's right. So in sport, you don't have to worry about using something that's going to get you into some kind of trouble. It's an effortless daily habit that you'll really thank yourself for getting involved in. And you can do it here, of course, with the Thought Police, because, you know, we're always here to help. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Here's what you do. You go to drinkag1.com/thoughtpolice. That's drinkag1.com/thoughtpolice. You know it makes sense. Check it out. Now, you were telling me a story the other day about your latest adventure out in London where you managed to book a table at a restaurant and they tried to make you fucking sit outside.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I mean, in this weather? By the way, the Arctic blast, we shouldn't forget about you walking like a penguin today. You also done that. Where in Scotland, they've actually put out in NHS Scotland, walk like a penguin so you don't fall over. What a fucking load of old shit.
Yeah. They literally put out pictures of penguins Because if you walk like a penguin, flat-footed, you know, waddling from side to side,
yeah.
you won't fall over in the icy conditions. Go to Twitter. You can look it up on Talk TV or on @TVKev. You can see me giving that a try. So Saturday, it was my wife Henrietta's birthday. Well, it's actually her birthday yesterday, but we went out for a big night on the nearest Saturday to her special occasion. She's reached the age of 30 again. So we go to this restaurant. I'm not going to name it, you know, but let me just say it's a flash restaurant. I book the table and they go, yeah, here's your table. So they just led this fucking table out in the street.
Right.
And I go, I don't think I want to sit
in the freezing cold weather.
It's -3. There's this thing. I don't really want to sit outside. Well, that's what you booked.
Yeah.
I said, no, I fucking didn't.
Right. Why would you book to sit
exactly
outside?
What I said. I said, why would I book to sit outside in the middle of fucking January? And you know what she said? This is the maitre d'. She goes, I don't know. Anyway, Christ. We've written to that. So then they said, oh, we found you a table inside. It was utter shit. So I said, shove it up your ass.
Yeah.
And we went to...
So is that another place where we go back to?
We went to another restaurant where they'd run out of food. So at that stage, I went to ended up in the Ivy main restaurant on West Street.
Very nice.
Just and we they said, I said, can you get me in now? I mean, I know them there. It's quite hard to get a table. They said, I'll get you a table. Right. It's a couple of seats at the bar. I said, absolutely fine. Absolutely great night. Lovely food. But, you know, that's what London's coming to. Three restaurants before you find a decent place to fucking
eat. I know. That is absolutely fucking ridiculous, isn't it? But the thing that I keep saying, and I don't know whether it depends on the day, and it's not, I'm not usually around that much of the weekends, but, you know, everywhere I go, anywhere near any fucking outside, you know, entertainment, hospitality, it's pretty fucking busy. You know, pubs are pretty busy. Restaurants are pretty busy. I know people will say, well, it's not like that around the rest of the country. But, I mean, there's a lot of people spending a load of money. We had that ridiculous fucking shit this week where it's Blue Monday and people are supposed to be all depressed because it's the third Monday in January. Actually, it's the day that everybody books a summer holiday. And there's loads of people booking fucking summer holidays.
Yeah.
So all this talk of nobody having any money,
yeah.
I'm not quite sure where it comes from.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the cost of living crisis and all that. Of course, a lot of people are suffering. But as you quite rightly say, Mike, you go to the centre of every city, say Manchester, London, Birmingham, wherever... and you check out the flash restaurants of a Saturday night.
Yes.
They're fucking heaving.
Yeah.
They're fucking heaving. So, you know, people are suffering, but not everyone.
No, exactly right. What about Kyle Walker? Should we talk about him? He is the world's fucking most idiotic footballer. He comes into a close second. This story comes into a close second to the old Agatha Christie load of old bollocks. So the only reason I think it's funny is because actually I've got a sort of, not a sneaking admiration for Kyle Walker, but I just think, finally, we've got back to a footballer who's behaving like a footballer should behave, i.e. banging a fucking load of other women, and basically having two kids with a different woman to the one he's had three kids with, who he happens to be married to. He seems to have no fucking shame, gets his cock out in restaurants and all sorts of things. He is the quintessentially bad boy footballer.
Kyle Wanker.
You know, but, you know, at least they're not taking the fucking knee anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
They're trying to make out that they're all virtuous, like Gary fucking Lineker.
Well, there's this girl from the Towie in The Only Way Is Essex, Lauren Goodger. She's got a kid by him. And,
she's got two, I think.
Two kids by him. He said, no, not true.
Yeah.
To his wife, absolutely not true. So Lauren Goodger sent her the DNA results, which prove it is his kid. He's now desperately trying to save his marriage. Do you know why? Because it's going to cost him a fucking fortune.
Because he's so thick, he hasn't got a prenup. So she's after it for at least half of the 27 million. But this
do you remember him in the... Sorry.
No, I was going to say, just a couple of details that
go on.
So when he got kicked out for the second time from the family home, the first occasion being in 2019, when he got kicked out the second time, he basically took advantage of his exile by inviting two young women, variously described as sex workers, escorts and call girls, over to his rented flat in Hale for an orgy. And that was in April 2020. When he was actually supposed to be in lockdown.
In lockdown, yeah. Well, that's it. He got caught with these two prostitutes.
Hookers.
Hookers. And So it was like, well, you just broke the fucking lockdown rules. You're in big trouble. So he gets into his car, drives all... You're not allowed to drive anywhere, yeah. by the way. Then he drives all the way from Manchester to Leeds
right.
to see his sister, knocks on his sister's door, and his sister goes, Kyle, you're not really getting this fucking lock-in thing, are you? You fucking idiot. Yeah, go home.
But there's a piece in the Times this week, and you just got to, you know, when you look at him as the kind of proper footballer stereotype... You know, I'd much prefer to have a night out with Kyle Walker and fucking Marcus Rashford talking about free school meals for children, or Jordan Henderson and Mark Noble raising funds for the NHS.
Jordan Henderson.
I mean, do fuck off. Jordan Henderson's all going wrong for him in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, well, Jordan Henderson's playing for some Saudi Arabia.
El Alabi or something.
El Alabi. And he's absolutely stunned to find...
Nobody can name any teams in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, because nobody fucking cares. Right. He's on about like £1 million.
He's on 700,000 a week.
700,000 a week. He's shocked to discover that every game he plays, there's no crap. Right. Nobody goes and watches.
And
it.
Nobody gives a
nobody
shit.
Gives
and
a
nobody
gives a shit.
Nobody knows the score, and nobody knows what the fuck is going on.
Yeah. So, you know, he puts out the feelers. I want to come back to Europe, play some proper football. And Ajax, the famous Dutch team, said, oh, we might be interested.
Yeah. But
or whatever the fuck it is he plays for. They said, well, he's got a contract. That's going to fucking cost you a few million quid.
Yeah.
Ajax going, oh, I don't know if he's worth that much. So right. Jordan Henderson looks like he's going to buy himself out of his contract. So he's going to come back to Ajax, you know, about like fucking 50 million quid down.
Oh, what a twat.
What an idiot.
But
what
this is
fucking...
the trouble. Well, Mitrovic went there as well, didn't he? How's
Do you know what, my most Fulham fans, I cut off all interest in that fucking traitor when he went to to Saudi Arabia to make a lot of money. Don't blame him for making a lot of money, but he didn't treat us at all well, considering he was beloved of the crowd. We thought he loved us as well.
Yeah.
He just said, "Fuck it, I'm off to make." So I don't mind him. Don't forget, Mitro's pushing 30, so it's the time to make some money. But how is he getting on? I have no.
Nobody knows.
I have no idea.
Because that's the problem. Same with Ronaldo. I mean, every now and again. You know, Piers Morgan puts out another post saying he scored another fucking goal or something. But, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised. It's Saudi bloody Arabia, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, you know, again, Ronaldo is what now? 37, 38?
Must be nearly 40.
Nearly 40. No one can blame him for cashing in because he is literally at the end of his career. I don't blame people making money then. But Jordan Henderson, typical footballer moron,
yes.
didn't really thought he was going to be going and playing in grounds like Old Trafford.
Right.
And, fucking Anfield, but instead he's playing in these sort of fucking fly-blown desert stadiums right. with fuck all anybody right. in them.
And when they're not playing football, they're executing people.
Yeah, he's playing
it's
in
a different vibe.
Yeah, it's like, so where's your team in the league then, Jordan? Doesn't matter, no one cares.
Yeah,
it's true. It's
exactly
fucking
right.
True.
Fucking hell. So anyway, I guess we're coming to the end. Mm-hmm. By this time next week when we do this, I wonder if there'll be a no fucking government. I wonder if there'll be no fucking prime minister. Whether they force him out or not, I don't know. I don't really care at this point either.
They're done, aren't they?
The Tories are just
fucking. The Tories are done. They're going sooner or later, if not sooner. And you know, I just think I've got nothing against Sunak. I just think he's a shit politician who's made some terrible decisions and he's terrified to disturb the universe. That's his problem. He's fucking so risk averse. He's a coward.
And he's standing there.
Didn't he turn the fucking votes around?
Right. And he's standing there making out like he's only just fucking woken up to this problem. As if, you know, it hasn't been here for the last five fucking years.
Yeah. Hi, guys. I will make laws, you know, within international law, obeying all the rules. It's like, Rishi, you want to win the next election? Go and tell international law to stick international law up its own fucking arse.
Yes.
That's what the people of Britain want. They want to turn the boats around and stop these fucking migrants coming into this country. And not only have you done nothing to stop them, it's getting worse. And then we find out you're letting a million fucking legal migrants in every fucking year. Unfucking believable. So I think he deserves to go because he's basically politically a little coward.
Yeah, I think politically he's a busted flush, quite frankly. don't think anybody gives a shit. Talk about, you know, not giving a shit about Jordan Henderson and fucking Saudi Arabian football. I don't think anybody gives a shit about the Tories.
Yeah, that's what Rishi's going to be doing. This time next season, he'll be playing for El Ahed United alongside Mitro and Jordan Henderson in Saudi Arabia.
Midfield dynamo.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. Anyway, don't do anything fucking stupid in the meantime.
Go fuck yourselves.
Go fuck yourselves. We'll see you later.
Thanks.
We'll be right back.